There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, hour number two. Glad to have you here on this Monday, and good to talk to Andy Andrews about an event coming up. We're going to talk books, The Traveler's Summit, the newest book out from Andy. But if you're saying, Sean, I remember Andy from another incarnation, not just as an author. Oh, yeah, me too. And one of the things that I'm waiting, I probably said myself, and I'm waiting for at least one, if not both of my children to use on me, was the discussion of, you know, poking your eye out.
I remember my mom saying things to me like, don't play with those arrows, they'll poke your eye out. Don't play with that stick, it'll poke your eye out. And I remember thinking, I'm 6 years old, but I remember thinking, you can't poke your eye out with a stick. You can poke it in. Poke it out, you gotta run it up through your nose, up like this. I was kind of a smart aleck. I was too smart to be a smart aleck out loud, but I remember my dad getting on to me about something one day, saying, hey, when Abraham Lincoln was your age, Abraham Lincoln had a job. When Abraham Lincoln was your age, Abraham Lincoln walked 12 miles through the snow to get to school. I didn't say it out loud, but I remember thinking, hey, when Abraham Lincoln was your age, he was president, okay?
Let's bring on Andy Andrews, of course, corporate speaker, author of 20 different books, and also the man that made the very salient point about poking your eye in versus out. Thanks for your time. Thanks for being on with us.
Buddy, I'm honored to be here. How are you, Sean?
I'm doing great. And I want to talk about this because as a career, you know, as an author, that's a pretty big undertaking. I mean, you were, you know, speaking to folks. That came naturally. Obviously, people watch your stand-up or your motivational speeches. We get that. That seems to, and now it's obviously been refined as a craft, but that comes. But sitting down and putting words on paper, was that a big transition or was that fairly easy? How'd that work?
Well, it's still a big transition, you know, because I wasn't the best writer in my senior English class, and so I really see, you know, and you very kindly referred to me a minute ago as an author. I have a hard time saying author because that, you know, I say writer a lot, but you know, when somebody says, well, "What do you do for a living?" I have a hard time saying author because I'm like, that makes it sound like I think I'm a big deal. And I think that writing is at least as much a discipline as it is a talent.
Well, I mean, a writer, but you've sold millions of books out there. So, I mean, even if you don't have the, you know, the sports coat with the patches on the elbow and the pipe and the whole, I'm going to call you author. You call yourself writer. We'll just call it a draw.
All right. I like having done it. It's one of those kind of things. I love telling stories. And, you know, writing is just a different version of it, I guess. You know, you can't use ain't as much when you're writing as you can when you're speaking.
Right. That's a good point. There it is. That is the difference. That is why you're writing. You know, if you use ain't, you become a writer, not an author, I guess. The last book that I picked up from you was How Do You Kill 11 Million People?
Right.
And obviously, that one sold a lot of copies. But I have not, and I'm interested in talking about Traveler's Summit, but I have not read Traveler's Gift. Do you need to read those in order, Andy? How does that work?
No, you don't. It's... I mean, they work in order, but if you read one and then read, you know, if you read the second one and then read the first one, you wouldn't be out of line. I you know, the Traveler's Summit, the new one, is really kind of a it's a play on the question many of us have asked, which is like, hey, if you could have five or six people from history and have them all to dinner, who would you have? And I always, when I ask that question, I always say, and you can't say Jesus.
Okay, so
Jesus. You know, everybody says, well, of course, Jesus. But no, you can't say Jesus just because everybody would. But the idea in the Traveler Summit is that there are these people throughout history, and they're getting together to solve a problem because humanity is in a crisis, and there's a question they have to answer, and they get five shots at it. And so it's a cool story.
There's this crisis, and can you tell us now who you pick to have at this dinner table?
Yeah, when it starts, you know, the character, the lead character from The Traveler's Gift is kind of an everyman, and his name is David Ponder, and he, in The Traveler's Gift, he had traveled through time meeting with seven historical people who had been going through tough times of their own. Well, now, you know, we're like years into the future, and he's an old man, and he has been summoned to a final conference, a summit conference of travelers, and so humanity's at a crossroads, and all of the travelers are there. They're in a theater, but one at a time, they get called to the table in the middle of the theater to take on this question. And so you've got David Ponder, you've got Winston Churchill, Joan of Arc, King David, George Washington Carver, and a guy that most people have never heard of. It was a guy named Erik Erikson, who was a guy in World War II. He was actually a spy in World War II, and one of the more interesting research subjects I ever found in my life. Because I'm one of the few people you'll ever meet who actually has read the Nuremberg trial transcripts.
You're a fun guy, Andy.
Yeah, I know. Well, I read a lot of odd history, trying to just find a thread to pull or a rabbit trail to go down. And when I was reading those, there was one of the guys on trial with the Nazis actually said, he mentioned this guy's name, and he said, if it weren't for him, we would have won the war. And then
wow.
I found a separate place where Eisenhower, when he was president, mentioned this guy, and it said, if it weren't for him, we'd still be fighting the war. And, you know, I'd never heard of him in my life, and he was fairly hard to research. And so he's a character in that story that just kind of makes the story better.
This like the G6 summit with the six people speaking to us.
Yeah, actually. And you're thinking in terms of, like, if Joan of Arc and Winston Churchill and King David, three people from totally different times, could tell us something about today, you know, if they could give us some advice, or if they were watching and saying, hey, you know, this is where you guys are screwing up, or here's some understanding about that. And so that's the kind of thing. It's a conversational thing with some cool action points.
You're famous for when you speak to groups about that message that uplifts. Is that what happens in the Traveler Summit?
I believe so, but I have over the years kind of evolved more into, I guess, believing that motivation has kind of a statute of limitations, and while I like to be encouraged, I think proof is better, and so I am more into results than encouragement. I think I'm not talking about a mathematical proof when I say proof, but, you know, proof beyond a reasonable doubt, that kind of thing where, you know, logically it just makes sense. You go, yeah, well, okay, I never thought of that, and yeah, that makes total sense. And so when you can bring people along in that way and prove something to them they can use that and harness it for their own reasons. And, you know, it doesn't have to do with the modulation of your voice or the, you know, the crowd they were involved in. You know, proof has to be based on the truth, and it has to be real, and it has to last.
You know, I think about this. I'm just right now bouncing around ideas of what the book will be like. But today, let's take it rip from today's headlines. And you know, one of the challenges out there, people will. I don't know if it's a depends on the in the eye of the beholder. Is it a genuine challenge to challenge people's Christian faith and their you know, their take on the border? For example, we just got done last hour talking about immigration issues, and you hear people saying, well, you know, from a Christian's perspective, you should welcome all people. You should, yeah, and then other people say, well, you obey the law of the land.
Yeah, you know, I have probably a tougher time with that than most, just because I guess, you know, I am a Christian, and I want to bring people into a relationship with Jesus Christ. But in some cases, that might mean that I actually don't say anything about him at a certain point, or I don't talk about him with every conversation that I have.
Right.
You know, there has to be some kind of value, you know. I look at a lot of what people try to do in our country, especially as a target. Okay, you know, you brought that up, and so let's use a relationship with Jesus as the bullseye. Okay, mm-hmm. If that's your bullseye, if that's where you want to bring people, then if you look at a traditional target and that tin ring is the bullseye,
right.
Well, if you're going to bring people there, everybody can't be standing on the tin ring.
Right.
Somebody's got to be out around 4, 5, and 6 to bring people into a point where they're willing to hear something. Because at this time in our world's history, with the internet, and with everything we have, people believe they have decided. There are no more. There are very few common sense conversations anymore.
That's for sure. Because as soon as you start in on one, somebody lobs some kind of rhetorical bomb at you, and that is well said. I want to talk about the event coming up right here at home, and this is, I mean, I know you're touring all around with the new book, but it's nice to, you know, be able to hop in the car and drive to an event here along the Alabama Gulf Coast.
You're not kidding.
Imagine the tour schedule. It is nice when you can do a, yeah, I'll be up there, and then I'll be home in my own bed that night. That's kind of nice.
That's right.
So you're going to be at Fairhope UMC.
Yeah, for Page and Palette, going to be at Fairhope UMC, and that's a Wednesday night. What better night to be in a church than Wednesday night?
Right.
I mean, isn't that how we grew up? I mean, we grew up with, Sunday night, Wednesday night. But 6 p.m. At Fairhope United Methodist Church, their Life Center, Page and Palette is putting an event on, and I'm going to be speaking and answering questions, and so we'll have a great time.
Okay, when we come out, I'll probably ask you a question, you'll be like, Sean, I don't know that. Imagine the Travelers Summit obviously will be available for purchase, but what about if people want to go back and get earlier books, Traveler's Gift, or will they be available?
Oh yeah, they'll have all. I think I say all of them. They probably have most of them, and and I'll be there signing them and hanging out with everybody. I love doing this, and I really love Page and Palette. So, the bookstore thing is not something I do very much, but I will always do Page and Palette. I just really like those guys.
That's great, and it's an event right here at home. It keeps you close to home before you're going to whatever far-flung locations are out there. If people want to keep up with you, what you're doing, where you're going, social media wise, where would you send them?
Yeah, I'm andyandrews.com, and of course Facebook, just find Andy Andrews and click like, and I will be your friend. And I'm you know, pretty good at keeping up there, and I write a lot of stuff that just goes out to my list, and so just AndyAndrews.com or Facebook, and I think @AndyAndrews on Twitter.
Very good. Well, we'll check it out, and best of luck on Wednesday night. Hope to get you in studio next time.
Yeah, definitely. And Sean, thank you so much for your time. And we're very fortunate to have you around here, and so I appreciate all you do.
Kind. Thank you. And, you know, listen, you made my life when you talked about poking your eye in versus out. So, you had me there. You had me there, Andy.
All right, buddy.
Thank you. Andy Andrews joining us here on Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. We'll post that event as well on our Facebook page coming up Wednesday night at Fairhope UMC.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
127 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Hey, our buddy Brendan Kirby joins us shortly to talk about a couple things with him. A Yellowhammer news story about the graying of Alabama. See, this is part of that bigger discussion. Part of the bigger discussion that we got into, Attorney General Steve Marshall was in last week to talk about. And, of course, if you didn't check the news from over the weekend or today, we're talking about the passing of his wife and condolences to that family. But Steve Marshall was talking about that lawsuit that they were pushing here to challenge census data, right? How census data, when it was collected and how it was apportioned and what it meant for representation, right? If you're using all the people in a state versus all the legal citizens, how you carve up the members of the House, not literally, how you carve up House districts, how you apportion representation in this country. And the slow train coming is that there's a pretty big chance Alabama is going to lose one congressional district, right? We have 7, we go to 6, at which point not only is it an issue for the people that were in the district that has lost, but the gerrymandering that will redraw now 6 bigger districts and, you know, what that would, there's a whole bunch of stuff. There's consulting groups and all that, people making money talking about where the line would move to, you know, how AL1 would consume this much of another district and then, you know, on down the line, how that would work. But, you know, the bigger portion of this is this question about, you know, representation and where this goes. We'll talk about that with Brendan and the national debate story, the national immigration debate story plays into this. So we'll get into that coming up in just a little bit. Also, I know the president just spoke a second ago about immigration policy. Once again, he can executive action this, which I do not like. I do, if y'all haven't figured that out, I didn't like it during Bush. I didn't like it during Obama. I don't like it during Trump. Because it's a sign of two things. It's not the job of the executive branch. It is a tool used by the executive branch, but not the job. Putting pressure on the legislative branch to do their job, I think, is a good thing. Is a very good thing. President Trump's doing some of that here. But if you have a situation where this executive action is all that's going on, and Congress couldn't get the votes together for a bill to just patch up some of the issue. It was a bill that would prevent families from being separated, but for partisan gain, it wasn't passed. And that's an issue now. You're looking at constituents and you're looking at representation, and California would grow, as would, let's see, Texas and I know Ohio loses, we lose a district, and Montana doesn't grow. I think California and Texas and somewhere else pick up a representation. You're gonna be in a situation where this is not going to change. You're going to have enough voices that have a benefit to have. Think about that. If I'm living in a metropolitan area and they're about to do census and I can move all kind of people into that area and have them counted as people that need representation and then have them leave or do whatever, I'm in the catbird seat. But it's like I often wonder about vacation properties, you know, where people have vacation properties somewhere they don't live, not full-time residents. And if you have one of those towns, of course, they'll vote for, you can raise property taxes and do all these things because, well, somebody else is going to carry a bulk of the freight for your schools and infrastructure or whatever. Same thing on the census data. There's a, slow, if not a medium pace, 35 miles an hour or more descent to the bottom when you do that. But we'll get into that with Brendan talking about the graying of Alabama. It's two things. We're graying and we're getting smaller in population. Get into that. And also, yes, what about Sarah Sanders and getting kicked out of this restaurant? Is it analogous with the cake maker not making the cake for the wedding cake for the gay couple? Or is it something completely different? We'll get that from Brendan and hear from you when we come back. It's all straight ahead right here, Midday Mobile, FM Talk 1065, online at fmtalk1065.com.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
All right, 136 FM Talk 1065. Midday Mobile on this Monday. Speaking of books, we were just talking with Andy Andrews about his newest book. Our buddy Brendan Kirby has got the beach read of the summer waiting for you right now online and right next to the Andy Caps Hot Fries on the end cap there at Walgreens. Walgreens, that is Wicked Mobile. Hey, man.
Hey, how you doing, Sean? I think you came up with the most brilliant way to market the book.
Yeah, you pair it with a snack.
Exactly.
I mean, we like the book Wicked Mobile. We like the snacks. It's perfect together. Also, obviously, working with LifeSet.com and Yellowhammer News. And I want to start off on the home state angle here, the Yellowhammer News angle. We'll get into some of the national stories in a second. But it was interesting to read your down the data mine you went again. Story about the graying of Alabama. The median age is higher than national average in all but 10 counties. And I couldn't read through that, not help think about where we are in the discussion of Alabama possibly losing a congressional district and, you know, just the changing political landscape across this country.
Right. Well, this is a national story and a local story, obviously, yeah. Because the whole country is getting older because we are living longer and we're having fewer kids. So if you look across the country, there's about 500 or so counties out of 3,000 plus where the median age is lower now than it was at the last census year. And most of those are in the Midwest and the South. Those are the places where the counties are getting younger, but not in Alabama. Alabama bucks that trend.
That's why I think it's interesting, y'all. Listen, I mean, the trend is the South is getting younger, but we're not.
But we're not. We're getting older. And it's the same reason. This is tied hand-in-hand with the population trends. That's one of the reasons why we're not growing very fast and other southern states are, and as you alluded to, why we probably are going to lose a House seat in the next reapportionment because we are growing more slowly than the rest of the country. And it's tied together because if you think about it this way, and I like to think about it on the county level because I think it's easier to understand. If you are living in a county where the young people tend to move away when they grow up because there's not jobs available, not only does that make the median age higher because you've got more older people than younger people, but that county is then robbed of its women of childbearing years to have more children to replace the population and be the next. So they're losing in the natural population growth because the younger people are moving away, and they're also losing in the migration game because more people are moving out than moving in. So that makes it very hard to overcome just from a demographic standpoint, because if your median age is into the 40s, as it is in some Alabama counties, and you've got a lot of retirees that grew up there and their kids have moved away, and those kids, you know, obviously aren't going to live there, how do you ever turn that around?
Right. And, you know, in demographics or in population trends, they'll sometimes talk about donut holes. I mean, nationally, a part of that is, of course, the baby boomers and then our generation X being smaller than the baby boomers and then growing when you start looking at millennials. So there's a donut hole. But what you're describing in a lot of these counties in Alabama, it's not a donut hole. It's an edge of a cliff that I don't know how you recover from.
Right. It's very, very hard. And the only way you can really do it is to change those migration trends. So if you look at some of these counties, you know, these are rural counties. I mean, you know which ones they are. They're places where the economic opportunities aren't very great. There's not a lot of job opportunities. And these places have been losing population for decades in many cases. And so to turn, the only way you're going to turn that around is if you can somehow reverse that trend and get more people to move in than are moving out, and specifically more younger people to move in, because that's the key. Younger people are going to be the ones having babies. So then you get a positive net flow in migration, and then you can get a positive increase in the natural increase. Because a lot of these Alabama counties, they're losing population not just because people are moving out, but because more people are dying than are being born. And when you've got both those things going on, again, you know, it's very hard from a policymaker standpoint, because if you are a county commissioner or a mayor or even the governor, how do you change that? You need to change the whole economic conditions and somehow make the place attractive for young families to move in. And that's a lot easier said than done.
Yeah, and some of those things can't, I mean, just be impossible to accomplish. Some could be accomplished with some, I'm sure, some thought and planning. But yeah, why I said this cliff, you just mentioned it. It is the natural, the young people move away and obviously have their children in another, in the city or somewhere else, and then their children have children in the city. It's that trend. But that aging population, we're going to hit a point here, because these ages you're talking about, that it's going to drop so quickly, the population of those counties. I mean, it will go off a cliff.
Yeah, and of course, then you have the whole other issue is that when you have an imbalance of old people, I mean, traditionally, if you look at the population and you think of it as kind of a bell curve, the people in the Middle Ages, there's the most of them, so that's the highest. And then, you have fewer babies, and on the other hand, you have fewer retirees. Well, we are inverting that almost, and we've got a situation where the older people, you know, is as high or higher than the middle. And what that means is, more and more retirees who need Medicare and Social Security, and fewer workers to take care of them. And there's no easy answer. A lot of people point to immigration, but there's just simply not enough immigrants to make up that difference. And of course, immigrants, they also age, immigration makes the country marginally younger, but not enough to really solve that demographic time bomb we're in.
You were looking through different counties, and with the outliers like Lee County and Tuscaloosa County, obviously with Auburn and Alabama being pretty young, you started going through, and Mobile County, I guess, is under the national average, right? It's a little younger.
A little younger, yeah. I mean, and if you look at Alabama, so, you mentioned Tuscaloosa and Lee, the median age is in the low 30s, and it's kind of hard to understand why. I mean, those are two really big university towns, so you've got a lot of students. Now, some of those students, for purposes of the census, are counted in their home county, not there, but nonetheless, you have a lot of students, and you have a lot of recent graduates that stay, and so they're younger, although both those counties, the median age is higher now than it was in 2010, so it's going up, but it is still low. And then the other ones that tend to be young tend to be places with more dynamic economies. So you've got, Jefferson County, Mobile County, Madison County, I think, is just outside the top 10, but it's still fairly young. Montgomery County. So these are the urban areas. These are the places in Alabama that are getting those younger families. So the people who are moving out of these other counties we're talking about, some of them are moving to Atlanta and places, but some of them are moving to the cities, and that helps keep the population younger. And then, of course, not only do you get those young adults moving in, but they have kids, and that brings down the median as well. So that's why that's going on. It's just we don't have nearly enough of that, and we don't have a place like Atlanta that is just a huge population magnet and job creator that helps keep the economy dynamic and helps growth. We don't have any place like that. And a lot of the really big states in the South that are doing very well and growing is because they've got those massive metro areas, that are generating growth. Our biggest is Jefferson County.
Yeah.
That metro area is about 1 million people, but it's stagnant. It's not really growing.
Is that, I mean, just from what you've read, I'm wondering if you're looking at a strategy and you're looking at it as a leader of a state. You're looking at the state, not county by county, because, I mean, it's so balkanized, I get that. But if you're looking at the state and you had X number of resources, whatever, you had $10 in our scenario to invest here, wouldn't it make more sense of what you've said so far to invest all 10 or at least 9 of those dollars in one or two big urban areas in your state, big metros in your state, versus doling it out among the counties? I mean, it's almost, it's, to me, from what I've read, you wrote here, it's almost a foregone conclusion that the hinterlands are never coming back from this.
Well, I guess it depends on what you mean by spending money. You know, I mean, I don't think anyone would say that a rural area should just be cut off and not get transportation money and that sort of thing and school money. If you're talking about trying to
but if you're doing economic incentives, yeah. I mean, right now the economic incentive plan a lot of times is, hey, we're going to get this business to come to an area of the state where there's not much else going on, right? They go in there, we're going to incentivize, we're going to get them to go out there to whatever county it is and do something. Would you be better off saying, nah, we're going to make sure, because if this critical mass is reached with a metro, like you said, in Atlanta, it'll start drawing people in. And that may not help individual counties, but it sure as heck will help the state.
Yeah, I'm not actually sure how much directing the economic developers do. I think they're really at the mercy of the businesses. You know, if a business lets it be known that they want to build a car plant or something, you know, I think the state shows them a bunch of places, and they're just happy to get the business in wherever they go, and they let the business dictate, you know, what they need specifically from infrastructure or, you know, closer to the port, that kind of thing. So, you know, I think they decide where they want to go, and if it's in Alabama, then they throw the money at them, whether it be, you know, that Chinese plant in Wilcox County,
or
Airbus or whatever. I think they're probably more or less agnostic about where it goes.
All right, coming back from the break, more with Brennan Kirby. We'll talk about a couple things here. I mean, of course, the dust-up du jour when it comes to immigration and enforcement of our border laws. In addition, what about the outrage right now for Sarah Sanders getting kicked out of that restaurant in Lexington, Virginia? Did the owner have the right to do that? We'll get Brendan's take when we get back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
Right, 150 FM Talk 1065 and Midday Mobile on this now rainy Monday afternoon, at least the area right here around the studio. The majority of y'all are not in the rain, but we're in it. Talking with buddy Brennan Kirby from LifeSet.com, also Yellowhammer News, author of Wicked Mobile. And the showers are here, Brendan. I'm sending them your way. They're moving across the bay.
I'll have to hunker down. So I hope it didn't blow you off the air. So
no,
we
stayed on the air. We went through that. We actually went through that about a month and a half ago with the power spike. But no, we took that one right on the chin. But the engineering here did a good thing, and we survived it. So yeah, but we just took a real good pop. All right. Talk to me about what went on at the restaurant. The restaurant that has been called the Hen. Several people emailed me about a place called the Hen House, and I guess that means the Red Hen. The Red Hen restaurant there in Lexington, Virginia. Sarah Sanders, she goes to dinner, I guess the way I hear the story, with in-laws or something like that, and they go out to eat, and they're sitting down, and then they're asked to leave, in so many words.
Yeah, I mean, not in so many words. You know, the account was that the owner said, we have standards, and one of those is honesty and cooperation, and I'm going to have to ask you to leave. So there was no two ways about it. She got kicked out.
And they basically saying that you lie for the president. I'm paraphrasing here. You're lying for the president as a spokesperson, so therefore, we don't want your type here.
Yeah, you know, just as an aside, not having to do with this specific issue, I'm kind of dumbfounded by the rage that is directed at the spokesman for the president.
Yeah.
I mean, Sean Spicer, you know, got a lot of the heat, too. You know, those people are speaking for the president. You know, if you're mad about what they're saying, you know, you should direct your anger at the president. I mean, this is not, you know, Sean Spicer or Sarah Sanders individually. They are standing in for the president. So he's the one you should direct your anger at. They're just doing a job.
Well, their argument is that person's being a proxy, they're carrying the message, or the water carrier. They should say no.
But somebody is going to do it. Somebody is going to speak for the president and carry the administration's line. And, you know, getting mad at the messenger just, seems a little strange to me. Now, on the issue of you know, can a restaurant or kick out Sarah Sanders? Yes. I mean, you know, we have laws that protect, you know, people who are members of protected classes. And, you know, working for the Trump administration is not a protected class. So if this restaurant owner wants to kick Sarah Sanders out because she's the press secretary, I think she's in her legal right to do it. If she wants to kick Sarah Sanders out because she's a woman, though, I mean, then that would be a different thing. She'd be a member of a protected class. So legally, I don't think there's an issue. You know, morally and ethically, I mean, do we really want to get into a situation in this country where we have Republican restaurants and Democratic restaurants and Republican gas stations and Democratic gas stations? I mean, I think most people recoil at this. And I think it's stuff like this that if you know, I would say at this point, you know, Trump's reelection is probably somewhat of a long shot. But if he's got a chance, I think it's stuff like this. I think it's stuff like this and, you know, the Peter Fonda tweet and the, you know, the C word on the Samantha Bee show. That all, I think, pushes, you know, fair-minded people that don't really like the president to say, you know what, if I'm disgusted by this, I'm going to pull the Trump lever. You know, I think they risk a backlash by keeping this up.
Is there are there any links to this in the discussion? It's pretty interesting. SCOTUS, one of the earlier decisions dealing with the baker there that didn't make the cake for the gay wedding, and I know there's a lot of nuance there because it's more about the what the Colorado Board of it was more specific
to
that Civil Rights Commission there, but. Part of that to me also is, you know, we pointed out that the challenge here was that the person had to do something artistic, creative, right, to make the cake. It wasn't buying a product off a shelf. The same thing, I think, you know, if they did, because I've heard conservatives coming after this restaurant and saying, oh, they should be compelled to serve. And I'm with you. I don't like the idea of them doing it. But listen, there's no protection from being, you know, making the wrong decision or being a jerk in this world. So, because cooking is an art and all that stuff, I think that it seems to me line up more with this story than just saying, here's some store that's not going to allow people of, people who voted for Trump can't come down to Crazy Sullivan's World of Fireworks or something like that.
Right. I mean, you could hang a sign like that and then you could, immediately turn off, half of your potential customers.
Oh, it's dumb. Yeah, I don't get it.
But no, I mean, it's not the same issue. I mean, it's obviously not a First Amendment issue. It's not a religious freedom issue. No one has a deeply held religious belief that prevents them from serving Sarah Sanders. But, you know, at the same token, again, these civil rights laws are designed to protect members of protected classes. So you cannot exclude people based on their race or their religion or their gender in some states or based on their sexual orientation, race, color, creed. We're familiar with that. But you can exclude someone because you don't like them or you don't like the look of them or he didn't pay his bill the last time he was in or he caused a disturbance or any number of reasons.
No shoes, no shirt.
Civil rights case. If she could demonstrate that she was kicked out because of her gender, but I don't think she'd have a case based on the fact that she's works for the administration because that's not a protected class.
Hey, by the way, is having no shoes or no shirt, is that a protective class? Because that's no service, right?
It is what?
No shoes or no shirt. Would those be protected?
Yeah, I mean, you're allowed to set rules of conduct. I mean, we saw this with the Starbucks case, remember, with the two black gentlemen who were in the store. And, you know, they weren't buying anything. They were asked to buy something. They said, no, we're going to wait for our business owner. And from a legal standpoint, they had every right to kick them out. You don't have to have people in your place loitering who aren't actually customers. Same when you see a lot of stores, you can't use our bathroom unless you're a paying customer. You're allowed to set all kinds of rules like that. What you can't do is you can't discriminate, based on a characteristic that's covered by the civil rights laws. You know, if you wanted to say, I'm not going to let blonde people come into this, establishment, I mean, you could do that from a legal standpoint. You know, hair color is not a protected class. So I don't see a legal issue here. Again, it's just, I think most people are sickened by how divided we are.
Yep.
And, you know, I think that most people would think that whether you agree with someone or not politically, if they want to eat in a restaurant, you should just let them eat in your restaurant. you know, I mean, just, and it cuts both ways, I guess, because I'm sure this restaurant's going to get a lot of business out of this from liberals that are all fired up, but they're going to lose a lot of, you know, business from Republicans.
You know what? And it'll probably be a draw.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it happened, by the way, up in Minnesota when Trump had his rally, and there was a Fox News set up shop at some guy's, you know, cafe, and they got a lot of crap, you know, online. Well, how dare you let Fox News in there? I mean, is this really the kind of country we want?
I don't think so, but you know, you look around. Listen, we've run out of time because I would love to talk about Maxine Waters, and if that's a little different, but maybe you can join us tomorrow on the show to talk about that.
Yeah, sure, absolutely, anytime.
All right, if people want to reach out and find out more about Wicked Mobile or anything you're writing, where do they go?
You can go to @BrendanKKirby, of course, Light Zed all the time, and occasionally on Yellowhammer.
All right, and if you're wondering what the president had to say about Maxine, he commented earlier today.
Have you ever seen it? We will impeach him. We will impeach the press. But he hasn't done anything wrong. It doesn't matter. We will impeach him. She's a low IQ individual. You can't help her.
All right, there you go. 158, Feinbaum on the way next.